intelligent, forceful commentary on Professor Popolski's lecture. We do not have a roving mic, and it's not because we don't own one. It's that such are the 19th century wirings in this room. You may know that it's a room of great historical importance, and you've probably been looking at the graffito or graffiti which is carved into the desk. So my job is to appeal to you, please, to your best civil passions. Let's have a good debate. Let's not interrupt. Let's listen to each other. And because we don't have a roving mic, my job is faithfully to translate the questions. I'd rather not, for reasons of time, to have long statements. I want crisp questions, please. And could you please announce your name? And please, let's have the questions in very pithy form. And they can be directed. It's being recorded. The speakers are being recorded. And I'm being recorded here. So I will repeat your questions. There is a question up the very back. Name, please.
Adam Gajkowski. President of Nasza Polonia and Vice President of Federation of Polish Organizations in New South Wales. Also a member of Polish Organization, Chamber of Polish Organizations in Australia. It wouldn't be a question because there is nothing to ask these people. Their statements were full of lies. But to prove it, one small thing. If you will take a simple interview on the phone, to Mr. Popolski with his stories about who supported Prawo I Sprawiedliwość, who supported justice and peace. And he stated mostly only the people which were poorly educated on the lower class of Poland. Prawo I Sprawiedliwość, law and justice, won in every single group in Poland. And if you bother to research, you will find out with that people with high education also supported, majority of those people supported Prawo I Sprawiedliwość.
Okay. I take that as a comment question. You could use this because you were picking up on this as well. No.
Yep.
So you could just sit where you are.
Okay. I wanted to
show some slides.
Which is profiles of supporter of law and justice based on exit poll in October, and it shows that the highest percentage of people who voted for law and justice were with lower secondary and vocational education, who were farmers, and who were older rather than younger. Younger educated people and business classes tended to vote for other parties, for PO.
I mean, I would add that I don't think Professor Popolski said that it's the ignorant and the stupid. He did say the disaffected, and this is quite a different emotional experience. This is very different. There is a question from the gentleman in grey and white. Name, please, that question.
John Wilson. It's to Professor Jan. Might I suggest to you that democracy in Poland is not in danger because Poland has never experienced democracy. At best, it is a bureaucracy. A democracy is where sovereignty is with the people. And to quote Thomas Jefferson, he said that trial by jury is the only anchor yet imagined by man that can hold a government to the principles of constitution. So I would suggest to you that unless Poland and all these so-called democracies realize that they are being conned, it is a con. They are using that word, but it is not democracy. Democracy means the sovereignty is with the people, and it means common law, not statute law. And we are being brainwashed in this country to think that statute law made by bureaucracy overrules the law of the people. And the only place you get the law of the people is in court, where you have juries of ordinary people exercising their conscience, judging the facts and the law, and delivering justice. So until Poland wakes up to the fact that they are being conned, it is not democracy they are living through at the moment. It is bureaucracy where they have rival powers and invested interest groups. So if you really want democracy, you've got to get back to Magna Carta, and Magna Carta spells it out very, very clearly. We've got a wonderful monument in Canberra. No one knows it's there. And Magna Carta says very, very clearly that no free man, we're talking about free men as opposed to slaves, no free man should be taken indeed in prison or exiled or outlawed or dispossessed or destroyed in any way, nor shall we pass over him, nor shall we send over him, unless by the lawful judgment of his equals, which is the law of the land.
Okay, this was at least half a dozen questions. About perhaps a comment?
John, Magna Carta also said that you can't have fish traps on the Thames, which was also a provision. He also had particular provisions about Jews and debts and what a wife could testify. Magna Carta is part of an important tradition which has certain liberal input into an ongoing development of liberalism and ultimately maybe democracy in English-speaking countries. But I would just briefly and quickly say something dramatic and remarkable happened in Poland and Eastern Europe in 1989, and democracy is as good a word for it as I could find. It was a breaking of an evil and pervasive system by an engaged people, particularly in Poland. There are later books which suggest that in other countries it was simply, as it clearly was as well, the exhaustion of self-belief in the ruling powers in the Soviet Union and various others. In Poland, it was much more than that. It was a mobilized population, mobilized not simply for economic and other reasons, but for reasons to do with civil rights, which they claimed for, with union rights, with rights of association, with free press, all of which were not perfectly, not without corruption, not without backsliding, achieved from 89. It was a historic, monumental achievement, and I'm sad that it is being spat on, not by you, sir, but in current political polemics in Poland and elsewhere.
There's a question here from Dominic.
Robert Trembowski, I'm at UGS and I'm with a few Polish organisations. I'm trying to keep Chris. Step back from the institutions that you discussed, and I address this to Professor Popowski. One thing that we see at the moment, not just in Eastern Europe but in other places, is a bifurcation of the media, where if I talk to some of my friends across the political divide, they are reading totally different output that gives them not only different opinions but different facts, and more importantly, they aren't challenged by my views, and reading my stuff, I'm not challenged by their views. So society has essentially bifurcated where, as we see today, we have a real problem talking to each other. What do you see as a prognosis for that? Is that going to be an environment that persists, or do you expect at some stage in the future that Polish society in particular will find a way to talk to itself again?
In the long run, I'm optimistic. In the short run, I'm pessimistic. I think that such debates full of acrimony, such deep divisions, which, as you rightly noticed, go through not only political class, but also the media, they go through civil society, they go through entire society, such debates weaken democracy, prevent, end this marvelous 20-odd years of return to Europe, but in all societies which experience such acrimony, they ended very quickly when people started to realize the damage such a division does to the body politic and social bonds. Solidarity was not accidentally named solidarity. It created the short moment of unity. And the communists used before that very effectively divide et impera principle of dividing society, splitting it, and making it fight with each other. But that comes, sobering comes out of the crisis. In the long run, I believe that no society can tolerate for a long time such acrimony, and that there will be a return to the consensus, ruling consensus within the elites, as well as a form of social solidarity within society. But, well, it doesn't look like it's happening tomorrow.
There's a woman at the back. Nice and loud, please. Otherwise, I have to interpret you.
Naturally, I'm quite used to speaking loudly. No problem, as I'm a teacher. Liz Rengersky. I have read that one of the reasons that peace puts forward for its policies, for example, in relation to the media, perhaps, and public service, is that the process of lustration hasn't been carried out adequately. I'm just really interested in knowing the background to that and the kind of justifications you think that might have. Because I haven't heard it mentioned here.
Lustration.
Lustration, it is a very important factor. And I agree entirely that it wasn't done in Poland. It didn't satisfy those who wanted it, like in the Czech Republic, punishing the authorities for the abuses of law and power. And it didn't do what the German solution, the Gauck Institute, did, mainly a sort of reconciliation through confessions. It was neither fish nor fowl, and ended up leaving almost everyone with a sense that justice perhaps wasn't done very well. So I agree with your conclusion that it could have been done much better, not to leave this sense that things are hidden, that things are not straightened up. On the other hand, I point to the difficulties in conducting lustration in Poland. It's very difficult. Lustration followed the long process of, in the absence of better word, national reconciliation. The agreements reached in the 1989-90 breakthrough period were not conducive to any process of a Czech type, and not very conducive to the process of the German type. They were not conducive to the Czech type because the guiding assumption was that there will be no punishment, just confession, like in South Africa, the Commission of Justice and Reconciliation. It wasn't a German institution because, as we now know, the secret services in Poland, the communist secret services, hid many documents. And these documents are still coming out and produce a great amount of passions, both good passions and toxic passions. So it's probably a way of saying that although we would like to have a good lustration, you will find two Poles who have the same vision of what this lustration should have been.
Just to amplify that, because I agree with everything Jan said, lustration has been, in all of the countries of Eastern Europe, one of this kind of gnawing, unavoidable, unsolvable problems. I know of no one except the Germans who did it in a way in which you could say after the event is satisfactory. But the Germans had the Germans. We didn't have Western Poland, which could simply force a solution onto Eastern Poland. Not that in Poland that makes a difference. In Germany, it would not have happened as it happened if Western Poland had not, if Western Germany had not been able to enforce it in Eastern Germany. In Poland, the two factors that Jan mentioned, the hope for national reconciliation, communism was not an occupying army. It was the party was 10% plus families. There were, and as we know more and more, lots of people in open and not open cooperation with them, since it was the system for 50 years. I think it was a noble impulse in 89 to say, we will insist on the rules of the game so long as you play by the new rules of the game. But it didn't work ultimately, partly because of the resentments which it fostered, partly because I suspect it can't work properly. But the good news is that peace has come to terms with lustration, since their head of the procuracy is a former communist prosecutor in the 80s, and the head of media reform is also a serious party activist of the 80s. So at least peace has come to terms with the existing presence of those communists in the present day.
May I, from the chair, before we carry on, may I push both of you, who seem to me to be, understandably, more than a touch nostalgic for 1980, for the Solidarnosc experience, which was, of course, of universal significance in Europe. But perhaps that should not be the measure of things that are going on. And here is the question. What is the relationship between these processes that you've been analyzing and the wider process of European disintegration? There are hopes in Poland that the European Union will find, against the present government, will decry its lawlessness and so on. But meanwhile, within the wider space of Europe, there is a multiple crisis deepening. Stagnation, populism, disaffection of peoples with structures, a migration crisis, signs of lawlessness, the ignoring of directives and rules. All of this combined, Europe has not seen since probably the 1920s and 1930s. I wonder how both of you see this wider crisis in which Poland is now, so to say, a trap, or is it that Poland is actually contributing to the deepening of this crisis? Might not this Kaczynski phenomenon be part of a wider experience that is actually wrecking 60 years of integration? What do you think about this?
I think it's a very good remark, and I should have mentioned it, this surrounding circumstances. Europe is indeed problems. It's not only migration crisis, but also the persisting Great Recession, which is particularly painful in the southern belt, not in Poland. Therefore, very often we forget in Poland that the southern Europe is experiencing a very damaging, deep economic recession, which in many respects is similar to the Great Depression. What Poland experienced only for 4 years at the beginning of the century, Spain, Italy, Greece, have been experiencing for more than a decade. The youth unemployment, between 40 and 60%. And Europe is split now. This enthusiasm for creating unified Europe ended. It evaporated. Probably ran into three big problems. First, the solidarity within Europe. Can Europe survive the redistribution of means and goodwill to its weaker, slower members? Secondly, it's a vision of the future. What sort of Europe? Is it Europe which will become a federation, or Europe or independent nations? First 10 years after unification, it looked like that there is consensus in Europe about deepening, not only widening, but also deepening the European integration. This consensus has disappeared. And third, a very important problem is what to do with the future, especially the very, very dangerous process of aging. Europe is going through demographic crisis. All European societies are very rapidly aging, which creates a problem of intergenerational justice. Who carries the burden of pensions, future pensions? Who carries the burden of environmental repairs, which are necessary? Who carries the burden of increasing medical costs? And the tendency for the current generation in power, let's call them Polish baby boomers, is to shift these costs, these burdens on the new generation. And that is unsustainable, not sustainable morally. So there are multiple problems which are behind the European splinters and sort of lack of enthusiasm. So the disappearance of this consensus about returning to Europe in Poland is partly, at least, related to what happens in Europe.
There is a gentleman here who's already spoken, and may I ask you to be very brief. Meet Havionik.
My name is Andrzej Kozek. I am a statistician for 45 years in USA, Germany, and in Australia. I work at Macquarie University, now retired academic. And 2 days ago on ABC 24, Richard Di Natale, his new Greens leader, he expressed his concern about distribution of votes in Senate, which differs significantly from distribution of votes at the election. Let me remind...
Here
in Australia. In Poland, so first I should thank for this presentation. Unfortunately, I find that it was full of all this poisonous passion.
Okay. Could we have the question?
Yeah, question is, namely, how you missed the point where the problem, legal problem in Poland started. The old government left legal chaos. Okay, they selected in the last 5 days 5 judges of the tribunal court. So they reached proportion 14-1. Losing party in the election left constitutional tribunal with 14-1 to there. It was
breaking constitution.
Question is, how would you like as the constitution caretaker, constitutional court, which is breaking itself constitution?
Okay.
These are problems which are at the core of the problem, of the legal problem now in Poland. Not constitution is in danger. There are legal problems, they are solving, they turn to the international constitutional tribunal, waiting for a solution, and not just, I would say that you find that solution should be found on streets, by code?
Just a quick thing, because there is an important issue here to do with the constitutional tribunal. The outgoing government tried to pull a swift trick over its incoming rivals, it still had time to do
that. That's it.
By appointing 5 constitutional judges, 3 whose time was coming up during the period when the first government was still in power, and 2 whose period of appointment would only come after they were already out. There was a constitutional challenge to that shifty measure. I'm not talking angels and villains here. That if we had a discussion of the vices or the difficulties of the PO government, there would be a lot to say. But what happened was, they appointed 5 judges, a challenge was taken to the Constitutional Court, the new government came into power without waiting for this challenge to be heard. On the contrary, knowing that the Constitutional Tribunal's decision on that challenge was to happen on the next morning, they forced through an appointment of 5 judges of their own the night before. Now, if the institution, and as it happened when the court gave its decision the next morning, it was that 3 of those earlier appointments were valid, 2 were not valid.
But
so,
decision was
sorry, I'm talking. There was an institutional process. The institutional process was subverted by the forcing through of these new appointments. Now we have this impasse in the court. Then there were extra laws which had nothing to do with what you're talking about, which have made it impossible for the court to come to a decision because it has to have 13 out of 15, I think, for any decision, used to be 5. Various other procedural measures which have stymied the court, made it impossible to deal with ongoing political constitutional challenges. What I'm saying is, if you had any sense of institutions, you would have backed an institution resolution for it. Instead, the present government tried to undercut and then has ignored the court's decision.
People are looking at their watches and iPhones, and we are actually way over time. So I think what we should do is soon, very soon, end. You can, of course, come to Professor Pekulski and Martin Krieger to put your questions. I want to put one on the table about the wider significance of these events in Poland that we've been discussing and arguing about. Both of you are agreed, and this is a sort of central European principle, that the problem with concentrated or arbitrary power is that it can be stupid, foolish power, stupid power, but it can also, as every Pole knows from his or her history, can do great evils. You've both warned against these present trends in defense of liberal democracy. If I wasn't a liberal democrat, I wouldn't be much moved by what you had to say, because I would ask you, as I'm going to do now, what evils do you fear? What would be in the possible future scenarios that are now unfolding in Poland? What could be the wider evils or stupidities that Poland, so to say, gives to the rest of Europe and the world from these dynamics? Looking, we don't know the future, but looking into your crystal balls, what do you fear?
3 only, and I'll just list them because I'm conscious of the time passing. First, that Poland will alienate its friends, its allies in Europe, become a sort of like Hungary, and odd men out. Second is that all illiberal democracies which undermine the rule of law suffer also from economic decline. Mm-hmm. It's universally known that business can be done well only if you have conditions of relative stability and certainty. No one will invest in the business where governments can arbitrarily amend constitution, change the rules of the game, introduce preferences for national industry or national capital, as in Hungary. And Hungary is indicators of economic performance and government performance are going south. Third danger is that it might accelerate the process of European disintegration. We know that on the 23rd of June, Britain will run the referendum. And this referendum will be in many ways a test of European unity, while the end of consensus about return of Poland to Europe will be a significant factor in deciding this future of now fractious
Europe. Can I just make one?
Please, Martin. You've written extensively on what is called in Latin and courts of law the arbitrium. I mean, the dangers of arbitrary power. What is it that you see in the Polish case? that worries you?
Well, what worries me is this, and it's a general worry. There are many particulars. I don't have time to go into them. I'll just make one point, because it's a different sort of point from Jan's. I accept completely and am persuaded by his list of external consequences which might flow from not having strongly institutionalised liberal democracy. Consequences for the economy, for external relations, and so on. I just want to float what seems to me an important idea, it's not mine, but I am for the moment, that liberal democracy and the rule of law and the constraint, the reliable constraint on arbitrary power, is a thing that is a good in itself. The sort of thing you want to have, whatever else the consequences are, because having it means that people have some reliable confidence that power will not screw them. It may not screw you tomorrow. I'm not saying, and I don't know, whether Kaczynski is out to mangle people's civil liberties at all. I'm not sure. I have no idea. I don't know. I know he's after consolidation of power. I'm saying, whatever his motives, and whatever the motives of so many people who have felt their ideas are strong, right, and therefore people shouldn't get in their way, that's the wrong way to go, because arbitrary power so easily becomes wild power. It doesn't have to be exercised for it to be threatening. All sorts of journalists who live under the possibility that it might be exercised will start to think in terms of internal censorship, even if the motivations of Mr. Wachinski, now that he's become a Democrat, are different from those when he was a communist. We don't know.
May I thank you both, Professor Pakulski and Martin Krieger. Yeah. Can we show our appreciation and and thank you all very much for coming.
Very valuable for these toxic passions.